Support for this episode of Judaism Unbound comes from the Ashman Family JCC in Palo Alto, California, whose vision is to be the architects of the Jewish future. The Ashman Family JCC is an incubator for new expressions of Jewish identity. It creates innovative Jewish learning, celebrations, and arts programs that inspire personal connections to people and ideas from across the Jewish world. Learn more at www.paloaltojcc.org. This is Judaism Unbound, episode 143, Milk and Honeymoons. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we're continuing to explore the fifth anniversary of the release of the Pew Research Center's Jewish population study called A Portrait of Jewish Americans. It was released in 2013, nearly 25 years after the last major successful Jewish population survey, the 1990 Jewish population study. In response to the 1990 Jewish population study's various findings, a number of new initiatives were launched in the Jewish community, ranging from organizations dedicated to Jewish day school education, Jewish camping, and famously, Birthright Israel. It's been our impression that there have been many fewer new initiatives launched as a result of the Pew study 5 years ago, which is pretty interesting. Today, we're going to be talking to the one major Jewish organization that was founded, as far as we know, as a direct response to that Pew study. It's called Honeymoon Israel, and we'll talk to its co-CEOs about exactly what it does and for whom. But long story short, it sends couples that have gotten married within the last few years on a honeymoon to Israel. So we're excited to welcome here today the co-CEOs of Honeymoon Israel, Mike Wise and Avi Rubel. Prior to founding Honeymoon Israel, Mike Wise served as the CEO, Executive Director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Buffalo, New York. Previously, he served as the CEO of the JCCs of Greater Atlanta and the CEO of the Jewish Community Board of Akron, Ohio. The other co-CEO, Avi Rubel, was the founding North American director of Masa Israel Journey, prior to which he spent more than a decade working on Jewish community development in the former Soviet Union. Avi served as a United States Peace Corps volunteer for 2 years in Kyrgyzstan. Mike Wise, Avi Rubel, welcome to Judaism Unbound. It's so great to have you.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So I thought that we could just get started with the basics. If you could kind of give us an understanding of what Honeymoon Israel does.
You know, Honeymoon Israel really is the first and only Jewish organization that's entirely devoted to working with young couples in their first few years of having made this life decision, a big life decision to spend your life with another person. And navigating all of those decisions and all of those moments that are really important moments in people's lives, when oftentimes community becomes really important, and where community might not have been in the forefront of people's minds, all of a sudden community becomes something people are looking for. In the past, the Jewish community is focused typically on young adults, high school, college, and then families with kids already, kind of JCCs, and what happens with preschool. And this interim period when couples are first starting off has really not been a focus, and this is where Honeymoon Israel kind of steps in. Honeymoon Israel has brought 59 cohorts to Israel. Each cohort is 20 couples. That means we've brought about 1,200 couples in total on these trips from, I think we've now run trips out of 15 cities. And we have another 3 cities that are coming into the network right now. So we'll have 18 cities. And we ran our first trips in May of 2015. So it's been 3 years. And in our next year, we're going to run 33 cohorts alone in just the next year. So we've been building up pretty quickly.
Correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that each cohort comes from the same city, you know, with the objective of hopefully that they sort of maintain their relationships when they come back, and also that they kind of span the types of Jewish couples that there are, so that there's a mix of folks that are married to another Jew or married to someone who's not Jewish or gay or straight, or that sort of accords with the population as a whole. Is that the right way to describe it?
the fact that they're all from the same community is really the secret sauce of Honeymoon Israel, because it's really about building these little communities when they come home. So yes, and core to our belief is that we want the groups that go to be a direct reflection of their peer community outside of the Orthodox Jewish world, so that our groups kind of, we look at the Pew study and we look at local community data. And so most groups are 60 to 70% interfaith, meaning one person in the couple is Jewish, one is not, or one is a person of no faith. And the other 30 to 40%, both partners are Jewish, whether it's through converting to Judaism or they were both born Jewish.
I'd love to hear how this idea came together. You're in the grand scheme of Jewish organizations a pretty young one, but what is sort of the origin story and the evolution story of Honeymoon Israel over the past number of years?
In October 2013, the Pew study came out, and I just had this moment where I was struck by that if we don't, as a Jewish community, broadly, nationally, learn to engage young couples, regardless of how they're made up, whatever that means, we long-term are going to be in real trouble. And basically sat down and wrote out the idea for Honeymoon Israel. I titled the paper Honeymoon Israel, and mentioned the idea for the first time a month later at the General Assembly of the Jewish Federations that was actually in Jerusalem. I was a sitting federation executive. Got an amazing response at the GA, and then started blogging about it. And the place that Avi and I met was through a thing called the Jewish Agency Online Blogathon, where Avi was working on the receiving end and I was posting my papers. And the Jewish Agency was looking for the next great idea to engage young Jews in America. And Avi started writing me privately. And through that process, we met a few months later. We together then, with a third person, wrote a little article for eJewish Philanthropy about the idea of Honeymoon Israel. And that's when we had an amazing response from some big national funders. And 2 months later, Avi and I went to Boston. We met with the 1-8 Foundation staff and principal. And after 3 months, we're basically at the point of, okay, time to make this happen. And they committed funding to us for the first few years to fully fund the build out and operations of Honeymoon Israel. And Avi and I basically the next day quit our jobs that we were in and committed ourselves to this idea in building Jewish community.
There were some things in the model that were adjacent to things that were already in existence. So, you know, an Israel trip, Birthright's been around for close to 15 years. The idea of an immersive Israel trip being impactful, that's already been studied well. And so we weren't proposing something completely out of left field. We were sort of taking some of the learnings and applying it to a different population, taking some of the things that we thought maybe could be improved upon for this demographic, for a different demographic, especially around the idea of making the Israel trip a catalyst for a much larger project, which is really about building community. which is why so many parts of the model from day one, even in Mike's original writing, and certainly as we developed the idea, were around local, really making this almost hyper-local. We ran our first two trips from Los Angeles and Phoenix about 6 months after we launched the company, and once we, you know, figured out how to who we were looking for and how to go about it. We ran our first two trips that May, and we were able to, you know, really start scaling up pretty quickly after that once we saw the phenomenal response.
So before we poke a little bit deeper at the ins and outs of your methodology and the post-trip and all that, can you just walk us through a little bit more, like what happens on the trips? Where do you go? What do you see? Who do you talk to? What does it look like?
So Honeymoon Israel is a 9-day trip in Israel that begins from each cohort's home community. They fly as a group of 20 couples to Israel. Every trip has two Shabbatot, one Shabbat in Tel Aviv and one Shabbat in Jerusalem. Those sort of bookend the trips, and a week in the middle in between, that's partly spent usually in the Galilee in the north. So every trip has three sort of bases. And the trips are basically designed to have a few core components in every trip. One is, like I mentioned, the Shabbat experience, which for many of these couples, it's the first Shabbat experience that they've had as a couple. Every trip also has four what we call Honeymoon Israel conversations, which is really a chance for the couples to really dig deep with each other around identity and why they're here. At first, we allotted an hour for those conversations, and turned out that the couples really love them and they take at least 2 hours now for each conversation. And then a lot of the trip is also obviously touring some of the main tourist sites of Israel. A lot of our people are first timers. While we're in Israel, we do a fair amount of time, not just on the Jewish sites, but we visit the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. We have a lot of Christians on the trips. So we do visit some of the main Christian sites. We do, usually every trip has a day where we're either in an Arab Israeli town or in East Jerusalem, learning about a different narrative of Israel, not just the Jewish narrative. And the trip is also fun. Obviously, it's called Honeymoon Israel. It's a fun trip. We hope that couples will come back from the trip asking more questions than having answers about Judaism and about Israel. So it's kind of meant to be provocative, intense, yet also fun. Mike, what else about the trip?
We work with Avraham Infeld, who's a well-known Jewish educator, former CEO of Hillel International, to build the post-trip around the idea of his five-legged table, that if you have three legs, the table will still stand, so that every person will have something in connection with the other people on the trip if they can at least engage in three of these legs, which are
memory, family, the land and state of Israel, covenant, and language.
So when people come home, every group has a local community Jewish educator. Often that person is a rabbi. Hopefully people who have the time and energy to work in with the couples when they come home, where their job is to help facilitate and support the couples in the formation of the post-trip experience. We do a pre-trip orientation, pre-trip welcome dinner, so they get to know each other before they go on the trip, a welcome home dinner when they get off the bus, basically. And so, you know, we have now probably 18 people working for Honeymoon Israel. Most of those staff are local engagement staff.
I had heard about Honeymoon Israel a few years ago, but my first deep exploration of it actually happened through a certificate program through Hebrew College that's designed for interfaith families, Jewish engagement. That's what it's called. It's about sort of studying the history and contemporary realities of interfaith families. And we learned about Honeymoon Israel in our semester-long class that was sort of looking at a dozen or so Jewish organizations that do work for for or targeting interfaith couples, and sort of comparing and contrasting what are different strategies, what works, what doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. And so I initially was thinking that Honeymoon Israel was sort of an organization that was designed specifically around the needs of interfaith folks. And for me, that's cool. I'm in such a relationship myself, and so it's something I care deeply about. But then I recently read a piece that the two of you co-wrote, sort of questioning what it means to sort of be an interfaith quote unquote organization or to specifically target interfaith folks. And the sense I got is that you conceptualize yourselves a little differently from sort of a quote unquote interfaith organization. So I'd love to hear from you on that front, because I know in many conversations about you by others, the presumption is that you are an interfaith oriented organization. And it's not like you're the opposite, but I'd love to hear how you discuss that set of topics.
From the very beginning, we said we were welcoming to all couples, and we were explicit about being welcoming to all couples with at least one Jewish partner. We never said that we were focused or geared for interfaith couples per se. I think it because we were explicit about being welcoming, and then after our first few trips in each city, I think our alumni really spread the word to their friends that we were legit, so to speak, that we weren't just saying that we really meant it, and that we didn't have an ulterior motive around religion or politics or something that they might be wary of. I think that's just attracted a lot of people that don't want to approach an organization that might have an ulterior motive. So we've been able to really gain the trust of a lot of people in that demographic. But we never said that we were an interfaith organization or that we were focused primarily in that demographic. I think where we are hitting is a really important spot, is that the Pew study comes to life in seeing our work, in the sense that, you know, that 70% of non-Orthodox Jews marrying non-Jews, I think for a lot of people that are in the bubble of the Jewish community, they sort of wonder, wait, where, aside from maybe their own relatives or friends where they hear about it, this is it. So the fact that we are 70% interfaith, it's just a reflection of reality. It's actually a reflection of the American Jewish community.
The term interfaith, we have to find something else in the Jewish community, some other term to describe who these couples are. We call them Jewish families. Interfaith isn't what it's about. It's about who are they going to be as a family and how does that intersect with Judaism.
What I'm curious about is, given that the primary goal is a primary goal is the building of communities after this in-person immersive experience, I've been on an Israel trip. I went on a sort of a classic high school through my camp 11th grade kind of drill for a month to Israel. I mean it was great. I don't mean to push it aside as if it was insignificant, but for me, I frame it that way sometimes because I feel like what I got out of that trip, and what most of us, because I'm still close with a lot of these people, got out of that trip, was not so much the fact of its location in Israel. It was that we spent an amazing month together with a bunch of people that shared something with us, and that we were able to grow as a group. And I really am. I'm still in touch with these people. I Skyped with one of them like a week ago who lives across the country. Like it's still important to me, but I'm not convinced that it couldn't have happened if we had a culmination camp trip to Argentina or to France or to all sorts of locations all around the world. And so I've been working with this hypothesis for a while that I'm curious to hear from you about, which is that we have this gap in Jewish communal programming, that we have so many amazing travel-based Jewish things, but the vast majority of them are going to Israel. And putting aside like sort of political questions and et cetera, even independent of that, I think there's a lot of folks out there who, maybe it's the cost, maybe it's just the distance or the effort it takes to sort of go across the world for a little while. Like, I think there's a lot of people who aren't quite as interested in the Israel piece, for whom if there was a Western United States or a Southern United States or Argentina, all these places I've mentioned, would you be intrigued or excited if other folks arose doing this to places that are not just Israel, building really cool trips around Jewish experience in Europe or in South America or even in the United States itself?
We spent a lot of time talking about that. And can we do honeymoon Hawaii, honeymoon Aruba, and still accomplish what we wanted to do in terms of building community? And I think what we came up with as an answer is Israel's a complicated place, as is building a Jewish family. And can Israel serve as a model for how you deal with the complicated? And when you put people through, the deeper the experience, the more intense the experience, the living Jewish experiences, such as doing the two Shabbat experiences, going to Yad Vashem, those are things that can't be replicated elsewhere, that raise so many issues that people need to talk about. So while people can create a bonding experience in Aruba, Israel raises so many questions and challenges for these couples that deepen the experience. That said, for those who don't get on the trip, what we've talked about is, do we do Jewish weekend retreats at a camp? Can there be a weekend where we rent out some camp somewhere and have a bonding experience? And we think that that would be, it's not the big prize of going to Israel, but it could create meaningful community for some of these couples that they're desperately, desperately looking for. While we get four applications, probably three out of four could benefit from the honeymoon Israel experience. You know, it's a huge challenge for us. And what we've realized as we've gone down this journey is the folks who don't get on need and want some kind of meaningful experience. But we right now, as a building organization, don't necessarily have the bandwidth to provide it. What we need to do is help build these local communities through other experiences where possible for those who don't get on the trip.
I think it would be great to see other organizations or other people try doing more immersive experiences, trying things in other places. What Mike said about Israel being a place where questions that are really central around what it means to be Jewish get raised, I think is really important. I think it would be hard to replicate that anywhere else. Yes, you could have a great experience in a hotel in Hawaii or somewhere or you know, that you could do. I do think in this day, in 2018, with a 70-year-old experiment called Israel, it's almost, you know, for me and for Mike, at least also ideologically, but also to accomplish our, really what we're setting out to do, it would be, you know, really hard to do that anywhere else.
I'm much more interested in the question of not saying that, you know, sort of going anywhere is just as good as going anywhere. But I mean, I'm thinking specifically about Rabinovitch and the idea that, you know, he described a sort of future of like of an ellipse with two foci, you know, and that there would be both a focus in the diaspora and a focus in Israel, you know. And it's interesting to sort of imagine that we might explore, for example, Prague or, you know, places where Berlin, you know, places where therefore also in a complex way, there was both a period of flourishing in the diaspora, as well as other kinds of problems, obviously, you know, of disasters in the diaspora. And, you know, it could be sort of, I think, a very interesting trip, you know, I could imagine, you know, and I guess like the question is both, you know, I think the question is both that I want to get to is both about sort of the problematics of Israel, particularly for folks at this age, and also, you know, opportunities elsewhere, or, you know, again, if there's a real reason why the focus is Israel. So, you know, I'm curious, you're talking about folks that are in an age group, or, you know, you're talking about folks that are in an age that we see in the American Jewish community a lot of concerns about Israel, both in terms of the Israel-Palestine situation, as well as religious pluralism issues in Israel. And I'm curious how you experience the folks who may go on the trip. And I'm wondering if the folks who do have these concerns, they do apply and they do go on the trip, or is there a sort of self-selection where those folks seem not to go? And if they do go, kind of how does the trip work with them, and what is their experience, and what are your hopes with those folks?
So there's a few really important things that you asked about. One of the things that's really important to us, and I said this earlier, but we really make this a part of the trip. This is not an answers trip. This is not here's what you should think about Israel, or here's what you should think about Judaism. The trip is actually meant to be provocative. It's meant to open up lots of questions. Every day of the trip, people often, I think, every night go to sleep confused. That's great. You know, these are adults. They're going to figure out how they relate to Jewishness, how they relate to Israel. Our job is to really give them the opportunity to explore it, to experience it, which is, you know, part of that's why the range of things we do in Israel, the speakers, the different things we do, we try to really make it varied. We don't have one narrative or one idea that we're trying to promote, both about Judaism and Israel. And we really mean that. It's not just, we don't just say that and then just sort of do the old same old tour with the same speaker who talks about 1967. And, you know, it's actually like, we really mean that. And so sometimes people come back from Israel asking really critical questions about this place. Like, why should there be a Jewish country? Well, you know what? Guess what? So I'm also asking that question sometimes. And so we, you know, our pedagogy and our, you know, it's really about co-creation with these couples of Jewish life. So we're not trying to hide the ball. Just, you know, we have as many questions as they do. On the political side, I would say it's been actually surprising to me, being a Jewish professional and being kind of so in the bubble of Jewish life in my day-to-day life, how little these people, most of them, actually even know about Israel and about the conflict. Even the Jewish, not just the non-Jews, I'm talking about all of these folks. We're bringing people really on the fringes of Jewish life. They might have some ideas from the media, but most of them are not really sure about this stuff. They're not quite sure yet. They're asking very, very, very basic questions about this place. And that's been surprising to me, being so in the bubble. And so I think most of them come back thinking with a new perspective on Israel and asking a lot of questions.
Because the folks are exactly as you described, they're really new, whether it's to questions of Israel or to questions of Judaism. I guess for me, I'm curious in what ways what it does look like to ask the questions and set the context that you're talking about. Like, are there conversations with human rights organizations in Israel, like B'Tselem or Breaking the Silence or those kinds of folks? Do folks ever stay after the trip and go to the West Bank and see the occupation? I mean, are there ways that you look to create those questions like actively in folks? Because you're right that like being in this location will very directly lead to those questions. It's hard to drive past a border fence without asking some questions about it, or a wall, whatever terminology. And so I guess I'd love to hear what that looks like and how that proactive creation of questions and all of the great things that we want to come out of this trip, how does it happen?
As Avi said, most of these people come with such little background and understanding that in 9 days, when you're trying to do so much, we can only give them a little bit to take in. We will do give them opportunities to meet Arab Israelis. We've just recently built in an East Jerusalem tour for all the groups. What we do is encourage them to continue learning. If they can extend their stay, a handful of people will want to go into the West Bank to explore in a deeper way, to understand what it's really like on the other side of the barrier. Our approach, somebody taught me once that if you give smart people a broad range of opportunities to learn, they'll generally come up with the right answers. And I think that's our job. Our job isn't to come with a specific narrative, but our job is to offer as much opportunity as we can within a very cramped 9 days of travel. We really don't have the time to get into some of the deeper discussions, because frankly, most people aren't ready for those discussions.
Also, Lex, to answer your question, I mean, two things that we do very consciously. One is, the speakers, we do have a few speakers during the week. We try to make sure they come from different narratives, different backgrounds. Obviously, the itinerary, so that people are seeing different parts of Israel and hearing from different people, that we work that in. But the second thing, which I think is no less important, the setting of expectations around asking questions during the trip and what assumptions people might have. I mean, our average age is 32. These are adults, right? These are people very successful already in their careers, many of them. People often, though, when they feel like they're a smart person, but they're put in a brand new situation, they don't feel comfortable necessarily asking questions because they feel like, well, I'm supposed to know that already. Or maybe I'm supposed to know that word, Havdalah or Shabbat or Palestinian. I think we do a good job of really creating a space where people are allowed to say whatever they want. And there's no question that's a bad question. We really try to emphasize that this is their space to explore. And I think both about Israel, about the Jewish stuff, about the conflict, about all of this stuff. So people really do take us up on that. We issue the invitation, but we also create the conditions within the group so that they have the opportunity to ask questions. So I think sometimes, whether it's about vocabulary, and I think Jewish organizations really need to be careful about this, especially with so-called interfaith couples. Like, we say we're being welcoming, but then we throw around words like Havdalah, like whatever it might be. And that automatically people think, well, I'm supposed to know what that means, so I'm not going to ask any questions. And so when it comes to Israel, it's the same thing. People really need to feel comfortable saying, wait a minute, I don't think this doesn't feel right to me in my guts, let's say, this sort of country, because we're Jewish, they're Jewish, they're not, and they're, let's say, second-class citizens. A lot of tourists in Israel just won't feel comfortable saying it because they feel like they don't have a space to ask the question. So I think that's a big part of what happens on our trips.
It's challenging pedagogically. Like, I think that sometimes, and I'm curious what your experience has been with this. Like, sometimes it's maybe a little bit easier to talk about the religious pluralism issues in Israel than it is about the Israel-Palestine issue, because I think that both are disturbing to a lot of people, but it's a little bit less, I don't know, in a certain way, controversial to, talk about the religious pluralism issues, because that's a sort of internal Jewish issue that doesn't sort of have the complications of the intersection with other people's experiences, for better or worse. I don't know if that's a helpful thing, but somehow what I was thinking about was, if we somehow found that, like, we could take people into the world of, ultra-Orthodox Judaism in New Square or something like that for 10 days, and they would come to this, like, very foreign experience that doesn't really accord with many of their values, of egalitarianism and et cetera. But that somehow we found that was actually a productive landscape in which to have some difficult conversations or, some probing conversations. But I think that, if we were taking that trip to New Square, we would kind of all agree that it doesn't accord with any of our point of view. Whereas when you take a group to Israel, there's sort of a concern that it doesn't accord with a lot of people's point of view, but it does accord with other people's point of view. And then you get into that whole area that you raised at the beginning, which is kind of this concern about how do we deal with the fact that, you know, do people have ulterior motives? Do you have ulterior motives? Does the funder have ulterior motives? You know, and how do you sort of square all of that? I mean, it's like, you know, you start an organization, Honeymoon Israel, you know you're going to be walking into that situation, and especially with young people. So I'm just curious, like, how you've navigated that and how you imagine navigating it as the unpredictability of what's going to happen in Israel, you know, moves forward, right? It's sort of like taking an investment knowingly taking an investment in a very unstable company.
I just want to reflect on two quick things. One is our internal Jewish issues around pluralism. And some people have said to me, you know, maybe you shouldn't take these couples there, because a lot of these couples, are they really welcomed there? Part of this whole issue of, like, this is a complicated thing, this family you're part of. This family has its own issues, like every family. We're not trying to hide that. Like, you're part of the family. Come, you know, figure out how you can make a difference if that's what you want to do in this family. So we don't hide things. The fact that these couples, most of them, leave Israel with a new sense of welcome, both to Israel and to Judaism, should be a great thing for Israel and the Jewish future. Hopefully many of these couples will want to, you know, sort of bring that to life in the years to come. I think the other question about how we navigate some of these things in the future, honestly, a lot of how we've been able to grow is because we don't advertise in these cities that we're working in, and we're getting so many couples applying. It's because the word of mouth from couples to their friends has really been the driver. If we had an ulterior motive or an agenda that we were hiding, customers would have sniffed that out a long time ago.
So in the time that we have remaining, I wanted to just come back around to that, you know, well, what happens after they come back period, because, you know, I worked on campus for many years, and both in terms of Birthright, but more significantly in terms of Hillel in general, when I came to work on campus, it really was because I had this idea that kind of this was the beginning of adulthood, and this was the time when people could sort of start their Jewish lives as adults. And so it was kind of a good time to, you know, reintroduce Judaism. And I think that my experience from where I sit now is that is premature in our world today, you know, that college students are pretty distant from some of the significant life choices that define the rest of their adult lives. And you guys are in the right time of life, right? That's really kind of setting the beginning of people's rest of their lives, you know, is the time just before they have children, just after they have children. I mean, that's where their lives are probably going to be pretty much defined and remain what they are going to be. And I guess I'm curious what you're seeing in terms of what the people are interested in doing when they come back and what they're interested in exploring. I mean, what are the needs that they're articulating? What are the things that are engaging them? I remember, Avi, you told me maybe a year or two ago that you were a bit struck and surprised by the degree to which they were interested in sort of reimagining the Jewish lives in their own small communities that they were building, less so than looking for existing Jewish organizations with which to connect, or that was at least how I understood what you were telling me. And I'm curious just sort of what you're seeing today and where you think it might be going, or where you think you or other organizations might be able to help those folks build the lives that perhaps they're striving to build.
I think the couples, when they come home, are looking for a few things. One, they're clearly looking for social relationships, and those social relationships are really key. They're looking to continue to explore and practice Judaism in personally meaningful ways. So many, many of the couples will have Shabbat dinners. They, as individuals, will begin kind of their own family customs, whether it's putting their cell phones away on Friday night or reading something of meaning. For most of them, it's at a personal level, a personal being within their group. I had a call last week from actually a father of a participant who talked about his son having his first Passover Seder in 15 years and leading the next day, his first Passover Seder that he's ever led. So most of this stuff initially is really about creating a Jewish home, whatever the heck that means, and creating their own customs as a family. We're going to see over long term what the next step is for most of these couples.
One of the things we do in Israel is we do a pop-up giving circle where couples get to learn about social agencies in Israel, and then we sort of provide them with opportunities, support if they want to create giving circles back home. So we've seen those take off in five or six cities where they're running giving circles. People are interested in service, in doing things outside of work and exercise that gives meaning in their lives. So service or volunteering, something we've seen happening across cities. People come home and want to continue the conversations that happened in Israel. So we also help some of the cities have ongoing sort of Jewish family or baby classes, or which we think are kind of going to morph into kind of, you know, 21st century chavurot. And the other piece is just like that as we grow and have more and more cohorts in each city, couples want to extend beyond just their friends from their cohort, and they're starting to actually develop their own citywide, like kind of alumni councils, just to help build their own communities, which we're supporting, and we're being very careful to not sort of overstaff it from our end so that it's really their ownership.
So we're rounding out towards the end of the episode. But before we go, is there anything that you haven't been able to mention yet about your work with Honeymoon Israel that you would love to share with our listeners?
We have the opportunity to work with amazing young couples who genuinely want to explore what Jewish life means, that the American Jewish world needs to wake up and realize that these people shouldn't be written off, that the people we serve really want to be part of the Jewish people, and we just have to help them with opportunities to become part of the Jewish people. And this concept that intermarriage is destroying American Jewish life, it is a false narrative that we have to just stop already.
If we viewed these couples who are on the fringes of Jewish life, whether they're interfaith or not, these fringe couples, let's call them, if we viewed them as a problem, that we're somehow helping them solve a problem that they have, or that they are, this wouldn't work. You know, they're not a problem. They've met somebody they love, and they're trying to build life together. And I think the Jewish community is at a crossroads with this, where some organizations, whether they're synagogues or temples or JCCs, they want to be welcoming, but especially around the interfaith taboo, they can't get out of their own way around being judgmental or viewing it as still as somehow a problem. It's really hard to be welcoming but be judgmental at the same time. And so I think that crossroads and sort of coming to terms with that is something that the larger Jewish community is going to have to do. And I think we're at the forefront of that.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you, guys. This was great.
Thank you.
And thanks so much to all of you out there for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we hope that you'll tune in, if you haven't already, to our earlier episodes in this series on 5 years since the Pew Portrait of Jewish Americans, and also our episodes still to come in that series. So thanks for listening. We want to close out this episode, as we always do, by encouraging you to be in touch with us. And there are a wide variety of ways for you to do that. First, you can head to our Facebook page, Judaism Unbound. Second, you can go to our Twitter feed, @JudaismUnbound. Third, you can go to our website, JudaismUnbound.com. And last but not least, you can hit us up via email at dan@JudaismUnbound.com or lex@JudaismUnbound.com. The last request we'd like to make is that we really deeply appreciate any amount of financial contribution you are able to give us. And you can do that at JudaismUnbound.com/donate, either on a monthly recurring basis or a one-time gift. So thanks so much for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.